Happy Humboldt, everyone. It is Humboldt Holding Up. It's the Lost Coast Outpost's half-assed attempt at a podcast. We're now using our full ass, though. Full ass. My name is Andrew Goff.
And I'm Stephanie McCary. We're using our full ass now.
Did you know that the city of Riodel is one of the 7 incorporated cities in Humboldt County?
I actually did know that.
Did you know that the city of Riodel has a population of over 3,000, which is twice as much as, say, Ferndale or Blue Lake?
Now that I did not know. And learning it is just astounding to me.
It makes you feel good, right? But every once in a while, we get a tidbit of news out of Riodel that it didn't align with our previous conceptions of what Riodel is. And so in order to get some answers as to what's happening in Riodel.
Yes, so we're going to chat with the mayor of Riodel. Who better to tell us about it?
You went straight to the top.
Yes, then Mayor Deborah Garnes, who's joining us today in the Zoom. Deborah, good morning. How are you?
I'm doing well, thank you. How are you both?
Doing quite well. Thank you.
We're doing okay. Thanks, yeah.
All right.
Mayor Garnes, thank you for Zooming with us today.
You're welcome. Thank you for having me Zoom with you.
Yeah, that was a great time for all. We'll get to COVID and how that's affecting your city in a little bit. First, I just wanted to talk about Riodel itself, because we were talking about it, and it seems entirely possible to me that a lot of people in Humboldt who tend to stay in the Eureka, Arcata, McKinleyville cluster have never spent a significant amount of time in Riodel. But something that we at the Outpost, before COVID at least, were noticing is that it felt like there's been some new energy down that way. So I guess we're kind of hoping that you could just to start, you could pitch your city to us. Like, what is Riodel?
Well, you know, Riodel, it's just a quiet little bedroom community, really. But I think historically it had a very negative reputation over the years. It was, you know, the blue collar side to Scotia's white collar side of Palco. Yeah. You know, we had the bars and the brothels, which was fun. I mean, but you know,
oh.
but fast forward, we have, I think it was in the early, well, no, it was 65 that, Riodel incorporated, and the reason was because we needed a police force. So you know, and so there's
rough and tumble town, it sounded like.
Exactly. So over the years it was this struggle, then the highway came through, it became a greater struggle. Yeah. And but then, you know, I think as time passes and things progress, Riodel became like in 2008, when everything went south, a lot of Bay Area people filled up Humboldt County. I think they started at the top at Trinidad because, you know, they could sell a postage stamp for $1 million and buy up here half the county. So it started, and it came from Trinidad down and got to us finally. And that was good. It kind of got some younger energy in town. And now we, 2015, I think we started reaching out to the cannabis industry, because now it became this legal thing. And so the idea, well, it was my idea, it was a bit of a push, because it wasn't a Riodel kind of a situation, you know?
Yeah.
And so, but we started having meetings with our citizens. We started, just kind of really looking into things, writing ordinances. And so whereas we didn't have the retail revenue that, say, Fortuna or Eureka or Ferndale or pretty much anyone that's any bigger than us. So that was a struggle for us, because we didn't have a lot of revenue. And when we finally sorted that out, and opened it up to the cannabis industry, the legal cannabis industry. We have started having revenue come in that is to a place where we are financially in the best place we've been historically. Yeah.
Because Rio Del being part of the Eel River Valley, which mm-hmm. I think we all know that it's more conservative pocket of the county, and
right.
the fact that Rio Del has been so proactive about cannabis, whereas Fortuna and Ferndale might have been closed off to it.
Right.
Was that a hard sell for you?
It was a very hard sell, and I mean we even had. One of our council members actually ran for city council because of that, to fight that issue. And so we had over 200 public meet or 150 something public meetings. It took December 2015 until pretty much 2018. So about a 3-year stretch of that back and forth, that battle, that writing ordinance, changing the ordinances, and really, really having to make a focused push in order to get this accomplished. And even then, it was still tenuous for a while. We initially voted, it got voted down, but then a council member who was in the majority brought it back, and so we were able to move forward with it. But I kind of think, maybe Fortuna is a little actually more conservative than Rio Del, and I'm not trying to take away Rio Del's.
I think that's probably threats, yeah.
But I think it could be, But I think also because Fortuna, Eureka, because there is revenue, there isn't a need. I mean, there's a need for everyone to have more revenue to do things in their city, but the need was different. We had, a few shops here, a few businesses here, and that was the extent of it. And, Shell gas station was our biggest revenue source.
Right.
And so, like I said, Fortuna and the other cities weren't as in dire need as we were. So it has helped us tremendously.
Yeah.
But we know that that's not the only thing we can't just be that. We need to look for different sources of revenue. We're having in the coming coming weeks, we're having a economic development session just to try and sort out what we can do to bring in more businesses. That's I'm hopeful there. That should be positive. But the other things that have happened, besides being able to now put money into streets and getting streets fixed, we've gotten aid, like we got the ATP grant so that our roads got fixed up a little bit. Our main veins anyway got fixed up through the grant process. We've been fortunate. Our water comes directly from the Eel River, our drinking water. So, we've got grants to do a secondary water system to fix our old, it was the original water source, but to rehabilitate it so that now we, if something goes wrong with our water source, our intake gallery here in town, just over the bridge, we have a secondary water source. So we have things that are moving along in Rio Del besides the cannabis, but that is in the moment, that is our biggest source of revenue.
How many cannabis businesses do you have there now? I mean, I've looked at this in the past, but it's been a while. And
have 3 active companies in our business park, which is the Humble Del Rio Del Business Park on the north side of the bridge.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And those are pretty significant businesses. And then we have one dispensary in town currently that's operating. And we have another dispensary that is in the process. They have advertisements out for employees right now. So I was one of the people who, I was the driving force behind that, the drive to get cannabis here. At the same time, I think might have been the only one who thought there should only be one cannabis dispensary, because we're only 3,000 people, you know. Right. And having been in business, you know, if your business is based on 3,000 people, you actually need every single one of those people to come in every single day.
And I assume every single one of those 3,000 people uses cannabis too.
Exactly. And they put everyone would have to. So, but yeah. Hopefully, you know, what's been good is that people do come from out of the area, you know. Sure. So that's helpful. It isn't just Riodell citizens. So I think that they are doing pretty well. I don't know. I hope that the two businesses can coexist and they can both be profitable for them, for themselves, not even for revenue, because like I said, I've been in business and it's rough when you're sitting there waiting for a customer to come in and there's no customer.
Yeah. Yeah,
a little good, healthy competition there.
Exactly. Yeah.
You mentioned the work that you have been doing on your roads and specifically Wildwood Drive, which is the main drive there,
right?
Through Riodell. It seems like you guys have spruced it up, and there's been a few kind of like artistic projects happening there.
Right.
We a few months back we saw this video that we never got around to following up on. It looked like y'all put up the flags of pretty much every country in the world along Wildwood Avenue. What was that about?
Nick Angeloff is the president of the chamber. Okay. And he's the one who has, you know, made a campaign to get flags on there, because, you know, all the cities up here, Fortuna, Eureka, Ferndale, do things on holidays. They dress their town up, and we weren't so dressed up on a holiday. And he did a campaign, got funds donated, and he collects flags. As he explained to me, he collects flags, and so he has flags for every country. And I cannot remember that one occasion that he did, and it wasn't Flag Day. It was just after Flag Day, between Flag Day and 4th of July.
Okay.
There he put up, you know.
Yeah, it was just, you know, for me, it was, you know, as I think I mentioned to you in the email, you know, I went to Fortuna High and, you know, have perceptions of Riodell from way back. And so I see this video of someone driving down Wildwood, and like, here's the Nigerian flag next to the, you know, French flag next to the Bangladesh flag. And I'm like,
that's
so interesting that is in Riodell. I was kind of... And then, so there's that. And then also, in the last few years, you guys have put up some metal sculptures around town.
Yeah.
So the idea, I think, is that, you know, if you want to draw people into your town, if you want people to move to your town, it's got to look good. It's got to be attractive and appealing. And it was nice and it was quiet, but I don't know that Wildwood itself was particularly appealing. And so that's really what was the driving force behind that, was to start to put things out that looked appealing to people, that looked like we cared about our town, you know, and not just a nondescript place. When Elizabeth and I first moved here, we moved here from Sacramento. We lived a year in Xenia, and then off grid, which was amazing. And then here. And, you know, you drive by Riodell looking for a place. You drive by and you just constantly wonder what happens in that little town. What do you think they do in that little town? You know,
I know that feeling. Yeah.
You know, and I think that Riodell partly has survived on its reputation, which wasn't good. You know, and so I had a young man when I first came here, and I took a class at CR, and this young man's like, when I said, you know how you always have to introduce yourself and say where you're from, and he's like, my mom said never to go to Riodell.
Oh, no.
I was like, that's wrecked, you know. So it's a beautiful, I've always thought it's a diamond in the rough, and that we really want to keep it a secret because you know, you want to keep it nice and quiet.
Small part of its appeal, yeah.
Part of its appeal. So, but I think just trying to get it to look better, trying to get that curb appeal, up front, and not just be that nondescript place.
Yeah. So you were talking about this a little bit about, so you lived in Sacramento before. How exactly did you end up in Rio Del? It sounds like you've been here for a little while now, but.
Yeah, since 2003. Okay. The beginning was, it's 1,000 degrees in Sacramento, and I think Elizabeth did a interview with the Bee because we had a coffee shop there, and she was like, well, it's 97 here today and it's 67 in Humboldt. So, you know, that degrees really made a difference. But one of our or two of our customers, Pat and Bruce, owned a piece of property in Xenia, 100 acres with a cabin. And we would go up there, you know, to hang out with them. And then I had some health issues and I worked for the electric company there, SMUD, and needed to retire. And so we were going back and forth between Sacramento. So they offered their cabin and their 100 acres to us in Xenia. So that's how we ended up there. And while we were there, we just kept looking in Humboldt, looking for different places, you know, and we looked in Red Crest and Peanut. I don't know if that's in Trinity or Humboldt, but
that's Trinity, yeah.
Yeah, we looked in Peanut.
I don't even know of that town. That's okay. Yeah.
We checked out everywhere, but you know, we kept coming back here because it's so beautiful. And when you're leaving somewhere, you know, you're in the mountains now and it was so beautiful. You come here and you see Rio Del is a beautiful, beautiful place. And there was this house we would drive by and it had all these windows and that was good. And the windows looked right out at the bluffs. So we have a really beautiful view looking out at the bluffs. We get to see the morning sun, the rising moon, all the planets as they come up, you know. And it was really just a matter of wanting to be, I think my whole life I just wanted to be somewhere quiet and peaceful. Because I'm from Michigan, Detroit, Michigan.
Good. And what made you make the jump from, you know, okay, you moved to Rio Del, but like now you're like, okay, I'm going to run for mayor.
When, I think in 2005, when I came here, it was like the tiny little town. So, you know, I love Andy Griffith. So I started going to the city council meetings and to see what this city council was doing. And, you know, and I had opinions about what I was hearing and what was going on. And there was a couple of people who said, well, you should run for city council because you're always, you know, having opinions. And I believe that if you have an opinion and you have a position that you feel very strongly about and there's issues that you feel strongly about, then you need to stand behind what you say. You don't need to just say it and then disappear. You need to stand behind it. So I decided, well, you know what? I don't like some of the things that I was hearing or was happening. So I decided, you know, I needed to step up. Well, in 2005, I ran and I was not successful. But then in 2014, I ran. And at the time, I went down to City Hall to pay my bill. And they're like, you know what? Both of the females on the council are stepping away. We can't just have all men. We need a female on the council. You should run. And I had also said when I had the unsuccessful run in 2005 that if the city ever needed me to do anything or whatever, I'm still in. You know, I think I stopped going to city council meetings because a city council person a person who had been on the council years ago had told me, you don't want to go to the council meetings. They just frustrate you and there's nothing you can do. So after my bad campaign, I stopped going for a while, you know, but I still, you know, kept up on what was happening. And when the openings came up and a few different people reached out to me, I thought, okay, you know, I can try, you know, and I mean, it was, I have to say now, to be honest, the first campaign was 3 for 3, 3 seats, 3 people. It was a no brainer. Got one vote, I'm in, you know, so it wasn't this, the second time I ran, it was actually more than 3 people. So I actually got to say I won an election, you know, but I think sometimes that we talk and we complain and we want things to be different, but we don't want to step up and do it. And I just thought, you know, if I can say it, I need to step up and try and do it. I mean, it's a totally unpaid position. So it's just voluntary. And
wow.
So that's probably the roughest part is just like, you're taking a lot of hits for nothing, you know. But
yeah.
The payoff is you're actually helping your constituents and people in town who didn't necessarily feel like anyone was listening to them before. And, you know, my slogan was a voice for the people, because that's really what it's about. And so that's really what I try and do. I try and listen to what the constituents say, you know, listen to their concerns. If there's an issue, we had some issues just recently with homelessness on the River Bar. Some people camping out in a spot here in town. And I didn't know that these things were happening, but then I got emails from constituents. And so then it was like, okay. And I emailed them back and I started a dialogue with them, and we got these things basically resolved. And some of them were still in the midst of getting them resolved. But the idea is, if you reach out, from my perspective, it's incumbent upon us to actually listen to what you're saying and try and fix the issues. Try and, you know, just make it better, because there's no other purpose. I mean, to just be the fall guy is no fun. So yeah. You know, as the council, to just be there to get yelled at. So the idea is that if you help people, if you reach out and do what you can to help your constituents, then you're actually doing something for the greater good. And, you know, like with TerraGen, that was huge.
I was just going to say, you talk about listening to your constituents. And I think the first time that I actually encountered you, I don't know if you remember, was when I came down for that protest march in Rio Del. And I just was thinking to myself, I never thought I would be at a protest march in Rio Del. And there you were. And there you were on the front lines, you know, megaphone in hand, just like, you know, because the people of Rio Del were, you know, they didn't want to look at those.
They didn't want to look at them. They didn't want to hear them. They didn't want whatever, you know, and, you know, but we had to go. We got a group of people and we had to go and do door to door, you know, get the petition signed. There was we weren't trying to force anyone to do anything. We were just like, if you don't want this, and it was amazing at the time how few people actually understood the entirety of it, how little they understood that, you know, it was being pitched as, we're going to put them there and Rio Del is going to, you know, it's going to be here. That power is going to, you know, it's going to go somewhere else, but really it's going to be a lot of power here. You're going to get revenue. You're going to get all these things that weren't true. After you explain this to people, and then in one sense, you don't want it. In one sense, it's wind power. I was for it because it's wind power, because I believe in climate change. I'm a believer. And so, you know, this would be a good thing. I was thinking that wasn't fossil fuel.
Sure.
But then the more you looked into it, and it wasn't what they were saying it was going to be. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, our constituents were really not happy with it. And so then it became my responsibility then to fight against it. Initially though, I was all about, because I truly believe that my opinion does not matter except for one opinion out of 3,000, 3,300, right? My opinion is only that. My council position is about the people. It is about the constituents.
Yeah.
And so when I start, or when anyone starts trying to push their own preference, their personal preferences, their own, that I disagree with that within the context of being in office.
So
that's, but that was fun. It was an experience.
Yeah,
I had never,
that was fun. Yeah.
It was like really cool. Yeah. I had never done that.
Yeah.
There was a lot of energy that day. Yeah.
So, of course, you know, you've been doing all this great work for the city, and then, you know, who could have foreseen this global pandemic that we're in now? And I imagine that has, you know, hindered some of your efforts as it has with most cities, and affected some of those businesses, those new cannabis businesses that you're embracing. I mean,
fortunately, like, for example, the dispensary, it falls under essential business, so they got to keep running. The other ones that are across the bridge, they're basically families that are working together, so they were not affected. And they were also supplying to the essential business, you know, businesses.
Yeah.
And so that we were not as affected as most cities. We were not hit hard by that, is what I mean financially. We are not a PERS city, so we didn't have to worry about revenue coming in to fund that. We didn't have to, you know, so we pretty much, I think, with the exception of Mingo's Bar, because like we have Grunman's here, the gun store.
Yeah.
And it's probably a hunting store. But anyway, we have Grunman's here. Well, that business was considered essential. At some point, initially, everything shut down, but it came back up pretty quickly because I think in the state actually flipped on that issue. And then we have a Market and a Dollar General. Well, those are food, so those are essential businesses. Yeah. When the restaurants were allowed to start doing takeouts, then we had, because I think our basic businesses are, you know, stores, the grocery store, Dollar General. We have a liquor store, which was considered essential.
You
know?
Yeah.
So
we booze and cannabis, very essential. Yeah. Yeah.
So we
popular
definitely. So, you know, and those weren't Riedel saying these things are essential. This was the state. So we had Mingo's, for example, our bar also has an off sale license, an off-site selling license, permit.
So Riedel just completely skipped pandemic, as it sounds like you're saying.
Well, we didn't completely skip it, but we weren't hurt financially as bad as other cities. And I mean, we were so very fortunate in that. And, you know, then we got a volunteer corps, and we had people come in and sign up to be volunteers. And we took bags of food to the seniors and disabled every Friday. You know, if you needed something, there were people who would help you. One of the volunteers actually grocery shops for my neighbor, you know. So we have things like that when the Arcata, the AEDC, they had I can't remember who gave it to them, some entity gave them masks and hand sanitizers and gloves for, you know, a huge amount of them to share with the community. And so they gave Riedel our share, and we called up our volunteer corps and said, okay, we need you guys to come in. And it was like 5-6 people. So when we got those supplies, we had them come in and we distributed them to businesses, the masks, the hand sanitizers, and the gloves. And when prior to that, our city manager had ordered gallons and gallons and gallons and gallons of medical strength hand sanitizer, and the volunteers came down and they, you know, wearing masks and gloves, they transferred them into smaller bottles, and then we dispersed those out to the community.
I think you can see up there that we're, you know, the outpost is cheap, and we're running against a time barrier there. But there's another thing I wanted to ask you about. So something we periodically hear little whispers about is the relationship between Riodel and Scotia, which you mentioned earlier. You know, Scotia, the former Pacific Lumber Company town right across the bridge from you. In the past, there's been talk that Riodel could annex Scotia and bring it into the city. And I was Googling around, and it looks like recently the decision was made to merge the Scotia Red Crest and Shively Fire Departments under the Riodel Fire District. And I also saw that there was a meeting to discuss potential Scotia annexation that looks like it was canceled due to COVID. So what's the latest thinking on that? Is Riodel taking over Scotia or what?
No, you know, I don't think so. That if I think if someone's reached out, they've reached out to the city manager, not to the council. So I think if there's anything happening, he hasn't brought it to us yet.
Okay.
But the fire departments, that was a win-win for everybody. Because basically you got an emergency system instead of just, you know, just this one here and that one there, because people have to go to work. Your emergency personnel, they're not just sitting, they're volunteers. All of those are volunteer entities. So, you know, they're going to work. So if something happens, you have to scramble to get people during the day. I mean, you know, so by bringing them all together, now you have that resource.
Well, thank you so much for joining us, Deborah, and telling us more about your little diamond in the rough city that we're
exactly. you know, it's a quiet, charming little town. Really, it's beautiful. We have a grant in just put it in to develop a bike trail on the river.
Oh, wow.
So, you know, we are trying to do as much as we can to make this town as you know, uplifting and just a nice little place to be.
Yeah. You
know, one of my best friends grew up in Riodel and has always talked about how she wants to move back there someday and run for city council. And she's only ramped that up since she always asks me about you.
All right, well, Dota, come on. She should have come down this time. I appreciate you both reaching out and allowing Riodel to have, you know, a platform to say we're a lovely town. We're not that scary place that people historically thought, you know, when they thought about Riodel.
No, we're rooting for you.
Well, and I appreciate that.
Absolutely. We realize that sometimes we get a little Arcata and Eureka centric up here because, you know, we're just that's where we are and where we see things happening. But we have so many other great, incredible little cities in this county. And it's really great to learn more about it and all the efforts you're making down there. So
all right. Well, thank you both. And maybe we can do something again sometime.
Have more protests down there. We'll come down.
All right.
All right, take care.
Thank you, Deborah. Yeah.
Okay. Bye.
And that's it. I now have all of my questions about Riodel answered. Humboldt, I would encourage you, I'd implore you, the next time you're taking a trip down the 101, leaving the county, stop into Riodel and get your vacation weed.
Turns out they'll have soon two dispensaries. Yeah. So, hey, they're going to need some extra business there. And
as far as everything else goes, mask up. We'll get through this. Humboldt together. Ciao, Bella.
Yeah, thank you. Bye-bye, Humboldt. And bye, Andrew.
Bye, Steph.